Time to shift away from a story that's being shared quite a lot online today. Social media is all abuzz with this story. The dogs are what's getting the headline, but there's obviously a much deeper issue that is very concerning. The headline, Kim Jong-un orders North Koreans to hand over pet dogs so they can be used as meat. And as you can imagine, being shared quite widely with people who are outraged. But what's going on right now in North Korea seems very concerning. And one of our go-to people on North Korea on the show is James Trottier, a fellow at the Canadian Global Affairs Institute. He was a former career Canadian diplomat accredited to North Korea, leading four Canadian diplomatic delegations to North Korea back in 2015 and 2016. James, good to talk to you again. Thanks for being here.
Hello, Matt. Thanks for the invitation.
So obviously, the dog story is what's going to capture all the headlines, like I was saying, right? People are outraged because they picture their own pet dogs. But obviously, there's a very dire situation in North Korea when it comes to the economic situation and a possible food shortage.
Exactly. I would say that I'm somewhat skeptical about the reports regarding the dogs, as I was earlier this year regarding the reports about the death of Kim Jong-un, which were entirely wrong.
He seems to be miraculously okay.
Yeah, I also note that report also originated, the two reports originated from the Daily Mail tabloid in London, which is quite sensationalist. But having said that, you know, there are pet dogs among the affluent classes in North Korea, so it's possible that he issued such an order, but I would not bet any money on it. But that being said, there is no doubt that North Korea is facing a huge economic challenge. Sanctions have taken a huge economic toll. There are widespread food shortages. The UN has six agencies operating in North Korea, including the World Food Program, and they're reporting that 60% of the population is suffering from food shortages. And crops have been damaged by heavy rain and flooding, which has also reportedly damaged a major nuclear facility. And then on top of that, there are well-founded expectations that North Korea has been infected by COVID, and its health facilities are woefully unprepared to deal with any COVID outbreak.
Yeah, they don't really strike me as a country that's ready to go when it comes to public health, but it's really hard to get information out of out of North Korea, obviously. But the fact that they're right there close to China, it would be almost impossible to believe that COVID-19 isn't a huge problem there, right?
Yeah, and I think that they did close the borders at an early stage, but the borders are surprisingly porous between China and North Korea. I mean, goods do flow back and forth, and so do people. And, you know, there was some speculation earlier, which I think has a basis, that Kim Jong-un's disappearance earlier in the year may have been connected to a desire to basically quarantine from any COVID outbreak.
And so, obviously, when it comes to North Korea, it's hard to get a lot of information there. You talked about the 60% of people dealing with food shortages, but do we have a sense of just how bad things are? Like, is it a total dire situation there right now?
Well, there's a difference between the city, between Pyongyang and other urban areas, and the countryside. There always has been, and during economic hard times, that gulf becomes wider. So the elites live in Pyongyang, for instance, and so they will be buffered from a lot of the economic pain, but it's the countryside which really suffers, and it's the countryside where it's the most difficult to get information from. These UN agencies that I spoke about do have some reach into the countryside to a limited extent, but only to a limited extent. Having said that, I would say that, you know, the indications are that, you know, it's harsh now, but it probably isn't as bad as in the 1990s when there was widespread starvation after the collapse of the Soviet Union and the end of the Soviet subsidies to North Korea.
I was actually surprised to hear you say that there were some outside, like, UN organizations in there, because I would have thought that North Korea and the Kim leadership would just want to leave everyone out and just not take any outside aid. Maybe that's just a misconception that I had. So there are outside organizations in there trying to at least bring some aid to the people.
Right, and there's UN. The UN provides assistance, humanitarian assistance in Canada and other Western countries. The European Union, Australia, New Zealand contribute the humanitarian assistance to North Korea through the UN. And it's our assistance, for instance, is geared towards infants and pregnant women and nursing mothers, that sort of thing. And it's delivered through the UN. But in any case, they have a certain amount of humanitarian assistance going in, but it's limited because, as you might imagine, there's a lot of demands on countries for humanitarian assistance, especially this year. And so North Korea often comes at the end of the list.
In the countryside, what's the big economic driver there? Like, is it farming? What are the people who live there do for a living?
Yeah,
which sounds like a weird question, but I realize how little we know about North Korea.
Yeah, so there's agriculture and there's collective farms in the countryside, but it also takes place within the context of the division of the Korean population into specific groups. And often the segment that's considered unreliable are among the poorest and among the most rural of the population. So they're at the end of the line when it comes to supplies and food. They're also required to send a certain amount of food to the state, and a certain amount of food goes to individuals if they have relatives in the city. So a lot of food flows, such as it is, flows from the countryside into the city where the elite live. And the problem is that the supplies have been cut off, and not totally, but they've certainly been diminished, the supplies that come in normally from China.
So just to wrap up where we began, when it comes to the actual dog story, though, you're not buying it.
Yeah, well, I'm skeptical.
Or skeptical.
Of that. But as I say, the economic pain is real.
Would it be someone trying to leak the story as a cry for help? Would that make any sense when it comes to North Korea?
No, I think often these stories, like the death of Kim Jong-un, often are manufactured from whole cloth. They often come out of various places. The one about Kim Jong-un's death, for instance, came out of somebody in Hong Kong who sort of floated this story. So often they're manufactured. I would say this story is definitely not from North Korea. So it's not definitely not from the North Koreans. It may be from somebody in North Korea who, you know, whether the story is real or not. But it tends to be circulated as kind of a sensationalist thing, and it's picked up by social media.
And, I mean, I guess it worked because we picked it up and called you. James, it was good to check in with you. Thanks for breaking it down for us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
James Trottier is a fellow at the Canadian Global Affairs Institute, longtime diplomat, was accredited to North Korea for 4 diplomatic delegations to North Korea in 2015 and 2016.